This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius, live, fit, go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit BestWestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
We heard you. 9 years of Bring Back the Snack Wrap and you've won. But maybe you should have asked for more. Say hello to the Hot Honey Snack Wrap. Now you've really won. Go to McDonald's and get it while you can.
You're listening to The Western Rookie, a hunting podcast full of tips, tricks, and strategies from seasoned Western hunters. There are plenty of opportunities out there. We just need to learn how to take on the challenges.
Hunting is completely different up there.
I harvested 26 big game animals.
You can fool their eyes, but you can't fool their nose.
300 yards back to the road turned into 3 miles back the other way.
It's always cool seeing new hunters go and harvest an animal.
I don't know what to expect.
If there's anybody I want in the woods with me, it'll be you.
Welcome back to another Western Rookie Podcast brought to you by Go Hunt. I'm really excited because shed season is coming up fast, and I'm on the call with Brendan Labrum from Scout to Hunt. I mean, you're rebranded, or not rebranded, but it's the Western Shed Hunting app is what you really
that's,
have.
Yeah, that's our motto or tagline, whatever you want to call it. Yeah.
And so we've done this. I think this is your second time on the podcast. So other than like co-hosts, you're the leading guest on the Western Rookie Podcast. I don't know if you know that.
Really? No, I'm honored.
We used to have a co-host, Dan Matthews, so obviously he racked up a whole bunch of episodes. But other than that, yeah, you're number one. And it's probably because we're both shed hunting addicts, really, at the end of the day. Yeah. You know, so I brought a show-and-tell piece from last year when we were in New Mexico.
There we go.
We weren't looking for the Bitcoin antler. We were just looking for any antlers. But I actually didn't find this antler. We went with a guy, Stephen Walker, who brought us out there and had a great time. He actually found this one. And then I had like a shed antler that I hang from my rearview mirror. And he just loved that antler. And he knew I wanted to find a brown really bad. And we found a lot more whites and chocks. And he's like, "I'll trade you that antler for this antler." And I'm like, done, like 100%. I will go buy another one of those things. But yeah, so I traded him for that one. So it was really cool.
Trade.
But yeah, no, I wish we were looking for that New Mexico antler instead. We talked about it just in the green room, but it finally happened. Well, we should back up and explain the Bitcoin hunt first for anyone that didn't listen to our past episode.
Yeah. So this year will be our third time doing it. So it's our third annual Bitcoin shed hunt. In the past 2 years, it's been $50,000 worth of cash or Bitcoin. If you find, 50,000 if you find all five sheds, but each shed is $10,000. We hide each shed in a different state. So last year we hid a shed in New Mexico, Arizona, Utah, Nevada, and Idaho. So in each of those states, there's a hidden shed, unique, very identifiable, all of them were found. Well, all of them were found and reported, except for New Mexico, that was not reported. So there was four winners last year, each won $10,000. And then whoever picked one up, picked the New Mexico shed up, found the shed but didn't report it. So they did not win $10,000. We keep it really simple in terms of the hiding process and our, you know, kind of keeping tabs on it. We avoid a lot of technology per se to avoid being detected otherwise. So there's a trade-off there where something like this could happen where somebody might, who has no idea what's going on, you know, might find the shed and move on with it, not realizing that they have, you know, a $10,000 shed in their hands.
Right. But so, it's like, we talked about that. That's what I was mentioning. We talked about the specific thing. I was like, I can't wait till the year where somebody accidentally finds one not knowing what's going on. And when I said that, I meant more like, oh my gosh, this antler's crazy. And then they start Googling it and they found out they won $10,000. Like, that's what I thought was going to happen. I never in a million years would have thought you would have found like this, because the antlers are like, I explained it in the green room, but to me they look like it's a full sleeve. Like, you tattooed this antler with a full sleeve. Like, the antler's black, it's got white highlights, it's got your logo, it's got, yeah, you know, there's stuff on it.
One right here. This one is for this year. So this is what they look like.
Right.
Like, they get painted, and they get engraved with, you know, cool artwork. Very identifiable and, you know, not a natural looking shed. So
I figured whoever randomly finds one's gonna figure it out, but that didn't happen. They just found it and kept it. Like, I don't know, maybe it's like this long play where like, antler collecting is a real thing, right? Like, if you find a match set of 225 inch clean mule deer sheds, like, you've got thousands of dollars on your hands, right? Like, you could sell that for a lot of money. The bigger the antler, the more unique the antler. Like, imagine that Arizona freak bull. Like, if he wouldn't have shot that bull, I think it was like, what, 468? Like, that set of sheds would have probably been in the tens of thousands of dollars, right? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that probably wouldn't be sold. Nobody would want to let go of that one, but.
Well, you know, who knows, right? Like, someone's like, oh man, the money's been really, really tight lately, and some rich guy offers them 50 grand. You never know, but there's money in it. And I'm wondering if he's like 10 years from now, when this is a huge thing, he's like, I've got the only Bitcoin antler that was never claimed. Right. And then, you know what I mean? Like, everyone's just buying, like, just going crazy over it. I don't know. Could be interesting.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I mean, It is a mystery. We had some theories behind it, but we honestly just have no idea. So, again, to make up for that, because there was a ton of people looking for it. A lot of people were like, "Hey, man," I mean, we got so many messages where like we have solved the riddle, we've followed all the clues, and we've, you know, just gridded this area like crazy. It can't be here. And once we got like, you know,
a few of those, you were like, send me a picture of where you're standing.
Yeah, exactly. And so we're like, okay. And so here's the thing. The first year we did it, the same thing happened, where we were getting a ton of messages and people were like, "Hey, like we know where it's at. It's just not out here. You sure hasn't been taken." So one of our team members went and checked for it, and lo and behold, it was still there. And so we're like, "Yeah, it's still there, guys. You guys haven't found it." And then like 3 days later or something like that, somebody found it. So that was year one.
Oh, so you're kind of worried that was happening again. Like people were trying to get an extra hit.
Again, we're like, "Yeah, it's still out there. We've been through this." But again, after like the 50th person messaged us, we're like, "Okay, let's go check." We went and checked and it wasn't there. So,
do you think a wild animal could have like carried it off?
I mean, it's possible, but the thing is with how many people were out there,
right? And like someone should have found, like,
it would have, yeah.
There probably was a huge like circle and like a ton of people were on, like, for say, like, "Oh, we all figured out what mountain it was on."
Correct.
Right. Yep. So then everyone's on that mountain in general. And then like, you know, 10% found the next, and you like start whittling it down, but there's like a ton of people covering that area. So
I imagine it would have been found even earlier because it would have been removed from its hiding spot.
Well, and you get to keep the antler, right? I assume like whoever wins, like whoever finds the antler keeps it.
Depends. So, we have people donate their sheds.
Okay.
To the hen shed and, you know, some agree to allow the person to keep it, or we return it to the owner and they keep it, you know, for themselves. And the trade-off is the people get $10,000. So,
either way, you get the $10,000, but depending on how the antler was like sourced, you might not be able to keep the antler.
Yeah. The owner of the actual antler that was donated to the contest, has the option to keep it. So we return it back to him.
Oh,
but the person who found it gets the money.
Oh, I've done enough of these podcasts, man. I bet I could get you like a whole handful of contacts that don't give two shits about giving up an antler.
Yeah.
Like, we'll get some so that they can keep them.
They enjoy the artwork and it's kind of a keepsake. So
yeah, that would be the only difference. Like we'll do two. Like I'll tattoo one, and like that's what would probably be more fun is like if antler owner has a match set, and then like you tattoo both of them, one we hide, one the owner keeps. Type of, I don't know. It's probably not easy. I say tattoo, they're painted, but it's still like it's not free to do that work either.
Well, it is. So bone tats.
So it is a Jeff tattoo.
That's what he's called. Yeah, it's called bone tats. So you're on the spot.
Okay. Okay, cool. That's awesome. Have you, one thing that I've been really curious about, have you ever thought about venturing east? Because it is a Western shed hunting app, you know, through and through. All the features you guys have are really, really focused on Western shed hunting, like the elevation bands, all kinds of stuff like that. But there's still, that being said, there's more features in your app than any other app combined for even like flatland whitetail shed hunting. Like your rate information, the fact that you can like change your track line to be like, how wide can I realistically search? Like if I'm in a food plot that's picked clean, like I can bump that thing out to 40.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm going through like cedar thickets or like thick woods, I can bring it back down to 10. Like there's not another app out there that can do that. So like that's still like the best west or whitetail shed hunting app too, even though you're a Western brand. So I was just curious if you guys have ever thought about like throwing a whitetail state in there 1 year for the contest and trying to get some more people from the east using the app.
Well, we definitely plan to expand out there. Right now, we're with the launch of our new product and features, or the experience, the Shed Hunts experience is what we call it. We're getting actually quite a bit of Midwest attention.
Really?
A lot of users from the Midwest. Yep, they're using it. And like you said, there's a lot of features that are very dialed in for the West. But, you know, like, for example, the average elevation – shed elevation data you can pull with the shed hunts. When you, you know, aggregate your shed markers, mm-hmm. it displays the average elevation of all those markers by year that you found them. That's less important out in the Midwest and the flatlands, but even so, there's a lot more stats and things that, that the Midwest shed hunters are finding use out of and having fun with. So we're definitely kind of naturally growing
right
that way. In terms of the shed hunt contest, that's a major undertaking. Right. It's actually even a big undertaking just to do it out here in the West across, you know, the five or so states that we do. Just because we really keep a tight ship on that for obvious reasons.
Right.
So that the process of hiding the sheds and the travel and all that really falls on our small team. So to expand that out, you know, further east from where we're at would be a logistical challenge at the moment.
Well, I'll tell you what. I will donate my services and a shed off the wall for free if we could ever do a whitetail shed. And I won't even tell you, like, people will hear this and they'll maybe be curious, like, oh, hey, did you hide the whitetail shed? And I was like, nah, Brandon wouldn't let me hide it. He just, him and his brother did it. You know what I mean? Like, I won't even tell him I was part of it. Like, I just, you know, we'll keep that part a secret so they don't even know.
What if they offer you $10,001?
$10,001? Well, that wouldn't, like, I think it'd just be fun to be a part of it, you know? Like, the money part, I'm almost leaning towards the guy that found it and didn't record it. Like, if I ever found one, I'd almost be like, ah, I'm going to keep this a secret. I'll tell Brandon.
That probably will happen. That probably will happen in Mexico. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I just think it'd be super fun. And that's more for, like, obviously, you know, I have the business podcast too, because you were on that. To me, that the whitetail thing was more of a market growth kind of strategy. Cause, like, it's common sense. There's way more whitetail bow hunters than there are elk hunters. I mean, it's a landslide, probably 10 to 1. And so I was just like a way to, like, really get the growth for the app. Cause not, realistically, not that many people probably travel out west. And so just by them realizing, like, hey, you don't have to be a Western shed hunter to use this app. This is a great app for anyone that looks for antlers, and kind of just use that to kind of spur some, you know, spur some growth in the Midwest, the Mississippi River Valley. I mean, there's places all around that I've shed hunted that I, since having you on the podcast, I go back to some of these properties and I'm like, this would be a perfect property. Like, it's huge. It's got the resources. It can sustain some traffic. It's public, so everyone can access it. There's tons of ways we could, like, hide it, make it hard to find. You know, it's not like a 40 with one fence line. You know what I mean? Like, that would be way too easy. So I've always thought about it. Ever since I had you on the first podcast, I'm like, I want the whitetail one. I want to help do the whitetail part, you know? But obviously,
well, you hit the nail on the head though, man. It's you're exactly right. This is, and just like we, you know, mentioned at the very beginning, this is the Shed Hunters app. That's
having the right tool for the job can make all the difference in the world. And that applies for Western hunts too, especially if you're coming from the Midwest like myself, because if you don't have it, there's no going home to get it. And that's why many of us Western hunters are also gear junkies. And the same is true for the folks over at Go Hunt. They have built the Go Hunt gear shop to be jam-packed full of the best, highest quality gear needed for your Western hunt. They try out everything that gets into the shop, and if they don't like it or they don't use it, it doesn't make the cut. So if you need something for your next trip, Go Hunt has something for you in the gear shop. They've got everything from optics, gear, camping accessories, apparel, footwear. They've got packs, and they've got some of the best brands in the industry. So if you're in the market for some new gear, consider checking out the Go Hunt gear shop. They're an avid supporter of the outdoors. They are supporters of this podcast. And most importantly, they're supporters of you. They want to help you be more successful in the West. So there's no better place to shop for gear, information, and knowledge than Go Hunt. And if you use the code WESTERN when you check out, you're going to get 10% off most of the regular priced items in the shop. So head over to GoHunt.com, get the gear you need, use the code WESTERN, and get the right tool for the job this fall.
That's our slogan, our tagline, because that's exactly what it is. Right. There's so many other good apps out there for hunting, whether you're in the Midwest or in the West, whatever. And we're not trying to compete with that.
Yeah.
We are, if you, the idea here is that if you shed hunt, this is your app. During shed season, This is where you keep all your shed hunting data.
Right.
And have fun with it. And some of the people actually from the Midwest that had been sharing and posting our stuff, we're talking about, hey man, like this is such a great way for me to separate my shed hunting markers and all that from my hunting stuff. So my map doesn't get all cluttered.
Right. If you own 100 or you hunt like a single property for the last 20 years, like all of a sudden it's just solid markers.
Right.
Yeah. So it definitely helps. I don't know. I wanted to make a wager that the average whitetail shed hunter finds more than the average Western shed hunter. But I don't know if that's true now that I think about it, because there's probably more casual whitetail shed hunters. It seems like Western shed hunters are almost like a different breed of shed hunter.
Like they are.
Very dedicated, very driven, like will drive hundreds and thousands of miles to hit places, like spend all day getting way more miles in way harder country. I've done both. Like I'm not trying to offend either group. But I've been on the side where it's like I bust my butt off whitetail shed hunting and I found 5 in a year. And in the West, like there's people that put 5 on their pack every hour, or not every hour, but you know, they really rack them up. And there's not as many, I don't think. I don't think there's quite as many Western shed hunters. So I don't know. But what I really do like is I think it is easier to match up sheds in the East. Right?
I think that makes sense. Yeah.
I have a feeling like whitetails, especially once you start getting into the higher age brackets, and because whitetails don't migrate, they don't cover as much ground in the wintertime. They're different. And one of the features that I love that you will not find on any, I mean, you can name them all, Hunt Stand, Spartan Forge, Onyx, Go Hunt, all of them have a shed icon. But what I love about Scout to Hunt is that you have a left side, right side, and you can pair. Like if you find the left side here and the right side 2 miles away, you can make that pair and then it'll link them and show you like this is the spread. Like you'd have to make a note and then you'd have to remember that you made a note, right? And that's, no one's doing that at scale. Like if you found like the one buck you've been chasing for 5 years, sure, you might remember that. But if you're finding dozens and dozens of sheds a year, you're not going to remember where each match was.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the fun of it. It just adds another dimension of fun to your shed hunting to be able to easily do that stuff. Cause like you said, if you're writing it on paper and then taking it back to, if you're another app or whatever, that's just a lot of time and it's not really worth it. But, you know, especially if you're finding, you know, smaller sets, smaller antlers, but if it's right there and it's all set up for you and it's just a few quick taps, then it makes, you know, it makes it easy and makes it more fun.
Yeah. I loved it. I mean, I think you had the podcast last year, right before we went to New Mexico. So then I got the app set up for New Mexico. We went out. I think we found like 27 antlers in like 2 days, which was good. It was fun. It was a great trip. My dog got really sick, which was not fun. We told that story.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, that part. My dog is not a Western shed dog. He's too big and he got too hot and dehydrated. I've only brought him because I didn't have a dog sitter, but I'm really excited to get out. I don't know where I'm going to go this year. And man, that's kind of it's a problem for a flatlander. And this show really, I think, has a lot of audience that are from like the Midwest that have eyes towards the West, whether it's shed hunting or normal hunting. But when you're trying to plan a trip out there, it's hard because for most of us, we get one trip a year if we're lucky. And so it's like, where do you go? And I was thinking about using Scout to Hunt is really like Scout to Hunt. It's like, yeah. I can do a lot of research. Like this year I can look up snow totals. I can look up migration ranges. And then I'm thinking I want to use the Scout to Hunt app to start building in some of those layers, like using the elevation band filters and showing like, okay, this year, you know, like Wyoming, for example, doesn't have actually very much snow this year compared to last year for sure. But in general, like it's a little bit less snow. We're back kind of to moderate drought stages, and so I could say they're probably going to be a little bit higher than they usually are. You know, now I can set that band and be like, if I went here, this is what I'd be looking at for these different elevation bands. Like maybe that band doesn't have as much good stuff as the lower band would, and you know, I could start to look at like, okay, if I went over here though and I'm thinking they're going to be a little higher, look at all of this great terrain to cover. Like, maybe I should go there instead. You know, help to plan out how to, like, pick a spot to go shed hunting the West.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the winter has definitely been relatively light compared to last year. So that's a great thesis, and there's the tools and information in there for you to definitely find a good starting spot. And then in addition to that, you have the shed regs layer, which is probably really unique to the Flatlanders, where you have these, you know, regulations on sheds. Yeah.
Like this year, if I'm not mistaken, in Utah, you have to buy a shed collection permit.
So that's a bill that's being reviewed, or whatever the technical term is.
Okay.
It's been proposed that there's a license and fee for that, but that's not currently
implemented. Okay.
Yeah. Right now for Utah, it's shed season's open, but you just have to take an ethics course online. It's free.
Okay.
And then they give you a permit for that, and then you can go and shed hunt with shed hunt confidently, no hassle. So that's Utah.
Yeah.
But then you have Colorado. They have their shed season that doesn't start until May.
May 1st, right?
May 1st, yep.
Yeah. Wyoming is May 1st for residents, and I think May 10th for non-residents.
Yeah, that's new this year. Yeah.
That took place last year. Like that bill got passed last year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think Montana is like more specific to like the ranges, like the different winter ranges and bigger properties will have like different closures.
Yeah, they have, and the dates vary across those areas, but for the most part, the majority of the state is open.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on. So.
Oh, and Idaho. Idaho has a new one this year too, on Eastern Idaho. So.
Oh, closure or a season?
Yeah, regular. Yeah, season for that. Yep.
So, are you doing Scout to Hunt full time now?
Yeah, I have been for.
Okay, past 2 years. Okay, I can't remember. We've had so many guests on the other show that I can't remember like everyone's working status. I'm assuming it was more than 40 hours a week either way. But
definitely.
So you live and breathe this stuff. How are you seeing like the response to the Utah bill, and like what's your opinion on it, one way or the other? Like I'm not looking for a right answer. I'm just like, how are you feeling about it? How are people that you're seeing feeling about it?
Well, the overall sentiment is strongly opposed.
Okay.
My two cents really is overall with anything government related, where you have a disconnect between the people that the law is affecting and those who are enacting that law. I think there's smart people there, but I think there's just too many people that are not allowing for clear communication between, you know, for example, shed hunters and the lawmakers. So, you know, I don't want to be disparaging or anything, but it to me personally, it feels like an attempt to make a contribution, an attempt to say we did something, right? Without really any perception of the unintended effects of that law. So, for example, if they do enact that, it's going to put pressure on a lot of out-of-state shed hunters.
Yeah.
And also on residents in Utah, who, if they are opposed to paying it or whatever, most likely will find themselves in other states. So it'll put that pressure onto neighboring states around Utah because they're going to be shed hunting less in Utah to avoid those fees and all that nonsense, which could have, you know, who knows what will happen from there. If that puts pressure on those other states to follow the same process to kind of mitigate that new traffic that's coming out of Utah,
right,
versus going into it. So I think there's just a lot of, you know, it's just very myopic in terms of like what these types of laws will actually do. instead of, you know, making a positive impact on the intended goal.
This episode is brought to you by Steelhead Outdoors. From the moment I first saw a Steelhead Outdoor safe, I knew I was going to order one. The ability to customize the color, the configuration, and most importantly, the ability to move and assemble my safe panel by panel makes Steelhead Outdoors the clear winner when it comes to gun safes. And if you haven't ordered a Steelhead Outdoor gun safe yet, you can still benefit from their innovation and creativity because the guys over at Steelhead have designed some awesome accessories. Their case keeper allows you to hang all of your hunting caps and gun cases off the side of your safe, and it keeps your hunting room looking clean and organized. Or my favorite is the bow keeper that lets me hang my bow off the side of my safe so me and my wife can walk into our safe room, hang up our bows after shooting in the backyard, and not have to worry about the hassle of putting our bows back in the case every time. Both the bow keeper and case keeper are magnetic and work with any safe, which means you can use them now with your current safe, and when the time comes to order your Steelhead Outdoors gun safe, you'll already have all the accessories you need. Head over to steelheadoutdoors.com to order your bow keeper and case keeper today.
Of reducing pressure on game, especially during the winter season.
Yeah, I hear you there. I mean, it's I've been vocally mixed on this exact topic for a few years, so people can go back and kind of hear that. You know, I'm not necessarily opposed to some type of sportsman-funded contribution because I don't think shed hunting is a non-consumptive recreative activity, right? Like bird watching, pretty non-consumptive. But you know, shed hunting, first of all, it's not. Like, you are taking a shed off the landscape. Now, scientists could go back and forth and argue the merits of calcium, you know, leaching into the soil. I'm thinking it's not that big of a deal on a, you know, macro level. It probably isn't going to turn, you know, the rainforest into the Sahara, right? Mm-hmm. But I do think that, shed hunters at large, all of us at some point or another are going to cause stress onto an animal. I think stress probably is cumulative. You know, it's so hard. Like, we try to do it well, but I do believe that, like, shed hunting, you know, I would not be surprised if someone came and said, hey, by the way, did you know that you've killed 3 deer by shed hunting? I'd be like, oh, yeah, not really surprised to know that. Like, I try not to, but, like, if they were to say, like, yeah, we actually tracked every deer you've ever encountered, its cortisol levels, and these 3 died because of it over your lifetime, right? I'd be like, oh yeah, probably, you know, that I could see it. And so I'm torn. I'm with you on the whole, like, government outreach slippery slope, you know, is this going to turn into a shed tag where you only get to keep one? Like, I don't, all of those things are huge concerns, but yeah. It's also like, you know, I don't necessarily think we should be allowed to, like, do whatever we want with no consequences either. I would love to see all that money be, like, directly put back towards, like, winter range protection and improvement, for sure. Like, I don't think that should just go into, like, the general fund and be used to, like, build a new park in Salt Lake City. Like, something completely unrelated. You know what I mean? So I'm torn on it. I really am. I don't know. I could see a happy medium is, like, you have to have a hunting license. Right? And so right off the bat, like, most residents probably already have a hunting license for that.
Well, that was part of the proposition, yeah, is to have, required to have a hunting license and then, and possibly an additional shed hunting license, a part of that.
I could see. So
they're adding a lot of red tape to it.
Yeah. The hunting license I could see. And I feel like, well, the concern to me would be the out-of-state pressure. Residents of Utah should be allowed to, like, have the best access towards the Utah wildlife. Like, that's our American conservation model. Like, the states manage their own wildlife. And there's a point to being a Utah resident. Like, you guys don't have any NFL teams, but you have really good hunting, right? Like, I live in Minnesota. We've got a bunch of professional sports teams, but we don't have any elk. Like, you pick your places to live based on what you want to do in your life. And if that matters to you, go be a Utah resident. So I think there's definitely a difference between being a resident and a non-resident. And hopefully that would help hopefully that would help the residents, like, not hit them as hard, but, like, make non-residents more cognizant so you're not getting, like, an inrush of people from, like, all the surrounding states, all of us from the Midwest, you know, because Utah's relatively famous for the elk herd.
So. Yeah, I mean, like I said, the path of least resistance is what we take in. So, again, it just kind of goes back to, you know, unintended consequences or effects from these types of things.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. But my expectation is that we'll see more pressure down in Arizona or New Mexico.
For sure. And I could see, I mean, especially for non-residents, like a Colorado resident that would typically maybe hunt Utah half and New Mexico half. He might just hunt New Mexico only this year. I do see trends in the West, though, that once one state does something, they all start doing it, right?
That's what's happening.
Like, once one state goes up $200 in tag fees, they all start raising tag fees. So I'd see that. My ideal system in a perfect world is that shed hunters go to Utah, they have a good time, and then they make a free will donation to winter range funding in trade for the, you know, that experience.
Yeah, I don't. There's obviously a lot of conversation that can be had around all that. Honestly, to me, it's really hard to isolate shed hunting and the effects of shed hunting from any other activity during that same same period of time.
Yeah. Right. Because what the big one that comes up is snowmobiling, right?
Well, anything that's like even during the spring. Where a lot of the shed hunting actually happens, right? You have your spring hunts, you have your predator hunting, you have any other activities that are out there.
Yeah.
Shed hunters aren't the only ones outdoors, that are interacting
right
with the animals. So to me, it's like, where's the data that says, yes, shed hunters are the primary,
stress
descriptor, predictor of stress.
I agree with you. Like, that data is, nothing is like isolated. Like, nothing is super clean and easy. I would imagine shed hunters probably are higher than a lot of them because it's like, if you're bear hunting, you're not trying to, like, you know, walk right to where that elk was bedded.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like there probably is a little difference. I don't know what the cause would be. It's definitely it's not zero on any of them, like snowmobiling, if you blow a herd out on accident.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't know. It's tough. But, like, the same thing would apply. Like, I think snowmobilers, that's also not a non-consumptive use. Like, you didn't realize it, but you just drove over a tree and, like, cut the top 2 feet off of that sapling tree. You know what I mean? Like, there is an effect of snowmobiling on the landscape, and I believe they already do have certain things, like they have to have trail stickers and all these other things to account for that, right? Like, there's non-consumptive users of our resources, whether it's wildlife or landscapes. Like, I feel like there's a little bit of an opportunity for everyone to kind of pitch in together, not just hunters. And I think that's on all fronts, and like, not just shed hunting, just all hunting.
Yeah, that's the general sentiment that they would agree with. That a lot of people are saying, look, if this is going to happen, then the rules need to apply across the board,
right?
If the objective is to reduce stress on game,
that's why I mean, I'm not trying to say like someone that wants to go see the, you know, gold chested warbler needs to pay $350 for a tag to do that. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, they might only have to pay $10 for a permit to go into this place, but it's still better. It still helps. It still helps the entire cause. So I could see it. I don't know. I'm very torn. I never like being told what to do either. So I definitely see that part of it, but there's unfortunately some bad actors, and it's like shed hunting is unfortunately a very scarcity mindset activity today in like the recent years. Like, I need to beat people to that antler, especially the bigger the elk are, the more of a scarcity mindset people get themselves into.
Well, I mean, it's just a natural behavior that comes from hunting, right? I mean, that's the same mindset.
Yeah, it is. It's
a little bit different game, but the same mindset.
But I don't know. Like, it feels different with shed hunting in a way to me. Like, not introspectively looking at myself, like, hunting, I don't know, maybe it's different when you can see, maybe it's because you can pick up more than one, and so then you really do feel like, oh, that could have been mine as well.
That's true.
I've definitely felt that emotion, like, God damn it, I wish I would have walked over there. You know what I mean? Like, even when it's my buddy, right? I never won't say anything because I'm like, oh, you're being an asshole. Let's dial it back. It's just shed hunting. But there's a little bit of that that I don't really feel when I'm hunting with somebody in public land. I don't know. Maybe I'm just messed up.
Yeah, no, I think that there is truth to that, especially for hunts where, you know, if it's, you know, limited entry, you know, like you got your animal and you're out, you're not going to, like, you don't really claim that area.
Right. Like, I'm not hunting all the animals, so I don't care about, you know, getting every bull. I just need to find one.
And yeah. Whereas with shed hunting, you're going back year after year. And I can see that there's some territorial aspect to it. Yeah. But it's the scarcity mindset that applies to both.
How do you feel the selling of shed antlers kind of fits into the conversation?
I don't think it really, I think it's a very small minority that prioritize the selling of the sheds over the experience of shed hunting.
Okay.
A lot of people sell them, but that's because they're out shed hunting, having fun. They grab a bunch that they don't mind, you know, letting go, and they might as well make a few bucks off of it.
Okay. So it's more so someone goes out, and I'll use Steven as an example, 'cause he's a wonderful person. I don't think he minds. And I feel like I know him well enough to kind of guess at his mentality, but he found, like, some years he finds hundreds, and I've been to his house. Like, he keeps the special ones, but he's like, I think he would say, like, I don't have room for them all. Like, I can't keep them all. I love the activity. I like being outdoors. Like, and he's definitely not he's a preacher. Like, he spends his life spreading the word of God. Like, he's not out there chasing down animals trying to get their antlers to fall off, for sure. Mm-hmm. And so he's just like, I just don't have room for them. I can't keep them. I have to get rid of them. Might as well sell them, you know? And so is that kind of the average shed hunter you're seeing out there?
Definitely. Okay.
That's good, because I would hate to find out that, like, there was a lot of people, like, out there for the pursuit of money that's causing these animals stress for their own profit. And that would be sad. Yeah. I think everyone would kind of
agree. Most of them, honestly, just paying back their gas money.
Yeah. If they can. Like, I mean, that's
right. Yeah. And it's not the funnest job. So they're out there for the fun of it. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, that's good. That's really good. What is the shed season looking like this year? Because last year I knew Utah was closing things down due to the severity of the winter. Not forever, just like they were, you know, putting in a season date, you know, a temporary season date to let the animals hopefully survive. I mean, that's really what we were up against last year, is just helping these animals make it through winter. Are we looking at more of a normal shed season across the West this year?
Yeah, Utah already announced that shed season's on, regular conditions.
Okay.
Nothing extra.
No special rules yet.
Yep. The only new thing this year is Idaho's new shed season. They have them in the east, southeast.
Yeah.
The winter's been pretty light out here. So for the most part, there hasn't been any major cause of concern.
Good. How did wildlife fare? Do you kind of get a sense from last year? Because I know, like, numbers were being thrown out all over the place. But, and, like, have we had a chance to kind of, like, look at the real data and be like, okay, this is what happened. This is, you know, was it as bad as people were worried? Did the animals make it to, like, safer wintering grounds? Like, I heard stats like 90% of antelope in certain parts of Wyoming got wiped out. Like, is that, you know, obviously I don't expect you to know every animal in every state, but, like, where it applies to you, like, what are you seeing?
Yeah, there was meaningful data that showed that the herds, especially mule deer, were they took a heavy hit out in Utah.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the number was. It was really high. It was pretty high for elk as well. But mule deer, I think were the highest. I'm trying to remember the guy's name. He works with the agency and he's a professor at BYU. He tracks all that. And, but yeah, so there was, I mean, it was a legitimate concern, right? With how heavy the winter was. And it showed through on the herd numbers. Yeah. You know, I'm speaking specifically to Utah. I don't know what, I know I did hear that it was, definitely had an effect out in Colorado as well. But for sure Utah.
Yeah. Well, it's good to know. Did you notice, I don't know, you've probably been so busy on developing your app that you didn't get out as much this fall as you'd like to, but did it seem like that all that extra moisture kind of had a green spurt on the vegetation, the food, the habitat? Did it like help? Because, you know, story for the last 10 years is droughts across the West, you know, decreasing sage, you know, mule deer habitat, sagebrush habitat, all kinds of things. Did it seem like it kind of shocked the system a little bit and help out?
Yeah, no, it was a plenitude of moisture. Absolutely.
Awesome. And I don't know, like I'm such a rookie to like Western biology, if you will. Like, does that hold on longer? Like here in the Midwest, like we could have a rainy spring, but if it dries up by like June or July, like everything dies. Like our habitat is very dependent on consistent moisture, not seasonal moisture. How does that work out there? Is it more suited for like a heavy seasonal moisture that can like carry that good feed longer into the seasons, or maybe even potentially this season from last year?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of varies across the West, but for example, we have the Great Basin, mm-hmm. which supports that, where the water is maintained. The moisture that's collected is maintained within the basin, you know, Utah, Nevada, some of the other states. But yeah, so a lot of that remains and supports the ecosystem area.
Awesome. So hopefully, like, you know, as sad as it is to see like mule deer numbers kind of crash, because I've already been in a pretty tough state the last decade or so across the West. Hopefully that helps give the habitat a little bit of a chance to sprout up and catch up. Hopefully that moisture sticks around. Hopefully they bounce back as fast as we can hope for. Because
yeah,
that's the one that concerns me the most. That, like, mule deer numbers are going down, and it seems like a lot of people don't really know how to fix it.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can't really, manage the weather. But
right.
The question is how they decide to manage the herds. And that's where a lot of people have a lot of opinions and good points. So it's not an easy job.
If you're looking forward to another fall of hunting big bucks, but you're tired of freezing your tail off or getting busted by does, head over to maverickhunting.com and check out their Maverick and Booner blinds. Both series are incredibly easy to set up and get out in the woods. I set up two of the 6-panel blinds in the same week. And whether your favorite spot is on a field edge or way back in the sanctuary, you can have a hard-sided blind in your favorite spot this season. Keep the elements out and your scent in with a Maverick hunting blind. The best part is Maverick blinds ship out of their factory in just 1 or 2 days, which means you still have plenty of time to get a comfortable blind set up before the cold weather arrives and those big bucks are cruising through your spots. Go to maverickhunting.com and use the code WESTERNROOKIE, that's one word, to save 10%. That's right, 10% on your Maverick hunting blinds.
There definitely are a lot of question marks in terms of how the agencies can go about doing that.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. So in switching back to more shed hunting focus, so you've got two in New Mexico for sure. I'm assuming you know what the other states are going to be. Is that public knowledge yet, or are we still holding on a little bit?
Not yet. Yeah, no. New Mexico's your first hint.
New Mexico's going to have a couple antlers. That's the first hint. You try to generally spread it out. Like there's some states that are repeats, but you generally, I think there's a couple new states last year, right? So is that kind of the theme? Is like we try to bounce things around, keep things moving.
Yeah. Yeah. And it, it's, a matter of working with some of the agencies too. And making sure we're not stepping on anybody's toes, but, that's part of the equation. But yeah, we definitely try to get new states involved. We'll have more details on those states. We haven't decided, but we haven't released it yet. But we'll have more details on that reveal here in the next coming 2 weeks or so.
Yeah. The Bitcoin Shed Hunt is, to me, like, out of all the $2 podcasts that I've done, to me it's the most exciting marketing strategy I've seen yet. And maybe that's just because I'm a shed hunter. But that's part of it, right? Like, it's fun. Obviously, yeah. You just love doing it. But it's also, like, a marketing strategy. It's how can we get more people using the app?
Yep.
Right? And giveaways are common. Like, Mountain Ops gives away trucks. Diesel Power Gear gives away all kinds of stuff. Like, people give stuff away all the time. But to me, that's like, man, this is a really exciting marketing ploy. How did it, like, go of starting this? Like, were you and your team just, like, super fortunate to, like, build Bitcoin miners back in 2009 when we were all supposed to be doing, like, our math homework instead? Or do you just, like, is it self-funded? Like, we just cash flow and reinvest in the company from each year's profits? Like, how does – because it's no small thing to do this.
No, it is a big undertaking. I had always wanted to do something, kind of off the wall to kind of break through the noise and bring attention to the shed hunting community,
right?
Or, you know, get the shed hunting community's attention, I should say. But I can never really put my finger on it, like how I wanted to go about that and what would make sense. I'm personally involved in cryptocurrency, and some of the other team members that we have. So that's kind of like just on our mind, on our background. And I happen to be on a lion hunt. It was a bear hunt. Sorry. It was a bear hunt with Ben Didamani.
Okay. Yeah.
Years ago. Yeah. He was in crypto as well. And so we were having those conversations, and then the two conversations kind of merged, where he proposed, man, why don't you just do a giveaway of a Bitcoin? Obviously within the context of shed hunting. And so that was kind of like the seed of that, was that conversation. And so I kind of took it from there and tried to mold it into something practical and meaningful. And this is where we're at. So
that's awesome. So do you feel like the Bitcoin shed hunt is at a point where you could continue it every year? Like, is that the plan, or is it, do you think there's going to be a life cycle on it that ends?
I mean, as long as people enjoy it, you know, it's we're having fun, and so far everybody else is having fun. So once that dies out, if it does, then we might, you know, rethink it. But for the foreseeable future, yeah, we intend to continue to do it each year.
That's awesome. Well, luckily, Bitcoin is up quite a bit over this time last year. So that helps.
That's right.
That definitely helps. Yeah, I suppose when it's down, you're kind of like, hey, you want to just do cash instead?
Yeah, well, most of them do cash. We only had one that accepted the Bitcoin or the payout in Bitcoin last year. We'll see if that changes this year.
Yeah, I don't know. Last year, I would have taken the Bitcoin.
Well, it's all relative, right? It's all in hindsight. But yeah, with current prices, yes, I definitely would have too.
Yeah, obviously it depends on if people are following crypto or not. I mean, like 2 years ago, it was at all-time highs, like 64,000 a coin. And we saw, did it ever dip below 20,000 this last
year? Yeah, it went down to 17.
17? Yeah, I knew it dipped quite a bit. I sold mine out at a profit. I was like, I didn't have any from the beginning. I was, you know, buying high, selling low this whole time. And so right now I've got nothing. I should have bought in when I was at 17, but then I just moved everything over to other stuff and never got back into it. It's so hard. I don't know how I feel about it. I don't know. I mean, you probably know a lot more than me about crypto. Like, I feel like it has its place, but I'm nervous at like which I don't think any of the altcoins are like, I think those are just almost scams for the creators to make their money. Right. Because there's like what, thousands and thousands of altcoins now. Like, people are creating coins all the time.
Yeah, no, there's some legitimate projects out there. They're definitely a discussion for another time. We can talk about this all day, but yeah, no, it's Bitcoin's Bitcoin. So, that's what we're working with.
I think that one's the most likely. I don't know. Like every now and then, I just get a little nervous. Like, I don't know. I feel like the government likes to get their fingers on things, and that's one thing they can't get their fingers on. But no, I think it's really fun. I even had a robot crypto set up to trade. Like,
Okay.
I don't think it was arbitrage, but it was like, it's probably scalping would probably be the right way to like just taking like micro profits off of swings.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun. It was really fun. I think I basically came out equal because it took a while to like set it up right. But it was really fun to like get a notification while you're off doing something like, oh, hey, you know, trade complete plus 3%.
Right. Yeah.
You know, that was, I got really into it then. But
always a good feeling.
But yeah, no, I'm really excited for the shed season. I don't know where we're going yet this spring. My wife took a day off, so we're going to have to do a short trip. So we're definitely not going to be going to New Mexico this year trying to find either of those sheds. I'll let everyone that's listening to this podcast go chase them instead. I think it would be even a stretch to make it to Wyoming. I think it's probably going to be the Dakotas, one of the Dakotas.
Hey, there's elk out there.
I had the worst shed hunting experience of my life trying to find an elk shed in North Dakota. We drove 5 hours. We hunted, I put on 30 miles in two and a half days. My wife put on like 24 miles in a day and a half. She found one old fork mule deer shed. She got a huge blister on her heels.
Bummer.
The day we did like 16 miles was almost whiteout blizzard. Like 30 degrees, like pelting rain, wind. Terrible. We saw a bunch of elk, didn't see any antlers. And then the morning of the third day, we were walking out of the hotel and the door was like super heavy and it was windy and the door like slammed shut on her heels right where her blisters were. And she just like instantly was like, I'm not going today.
Yeah, I don't blame her.
I'm gonna sit in the truck. You can go. And so I did a little bit. So yeah. That one stung a little bit to do like 54 combined miles to find one shed. That one
that's rough.
That trip hurt.
The fact that you're still in it just goes to show how dedicated you are.
That was the worst year of my life for shed hunting. It was COVID year, and our gas was insanely cheap in North Dakota. I was like 89 cents a gallon. And wow. So I'm like, oh, this is perfect. No one's leaving their house. Gas is cheap. The only thing you can do is shed hunt. Like, I'm going to shed hunt my tail off. I did 100 miles. I found four sheds. She found one. And she probably did 50 total miles, too. So it was just like, I was so excited going into that season and crashed so hard. And then the next year I set a record. So you never know. Like you can't predict these things. But yeah, that's right where I shot a huge elk, you know, right in the same units. And I've seen a lot of huge elk, like you said, in the Dakotas. So I don't know. I don't know where we'll go. I'm kind of on a mule deer kick. I really want to find some nice brown mule deer sheds, actually. So I haven't found any brown elk sheds either, but New Mexico kind of scratched the itch enough finding some hard whites that I now want to find like a nice big 4x4 muley.
Yeah, they're out there, man.
Oh, yeah.
Go to Utah. Come to Utah.
I'd love to. If I had the time, I would love to come to Utah. I'm actually – I should connect with Ben because he's – you probably know better than I. It sounds like you guys are way closer than we are. We've texted a couple times trying to get a podcast set up. I assume he's continuing with his Sheds of America tour.
Yep.
And so how many states did he get last year? He got a bunch of them.
I can't remember. Yeah, he did get a lot, though.
And so he wanted to swing through and hit Minnesota, which our schedules just didn't get aligned, and he had to keep, like, snow and weather and trips and stuff. So I don't think he got Minnesota last year. So I was going to help him get Minnesota, and then we're going to get a podcast in together. But I should reach out to him because that season's – coming up fast.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm super excited for it. I'm excited to use the app again. The last time we talked, and I'm going to admit this is probably mostly on me, I haven't been paying super close attention the last couple months just with fall hunting. I think we talked about being able to migrate pins from other apps into Scout to Hunt. Is that a new feature that's out now?
It's not out yet. We're testing it right now.
Okay.
So I have it on my version of the app, and it's working. So we anticipate releasing that very, very soon. But yeah, it's and to credit to you, goes to you and the conversation we did have in terms of, you know, getting that set up, to allow for custom marker imports. So the way it works is, and since Onyx is really the only one that exports, if you have Onyx and you export your markers, you can import them in batches. And so in the import process on Scout to Hunt is whatever import a file you're importing, you can determine if that needs to be mule deer or moose or elk, whatever, blacktail, whatever markers that those were in Onyx, will now be those types of markers in Scout to Hunt. And you can select the color and everything. So you can customize the import versus them just coming in generalized as the general marker type. But you can select which shed marker you want them to be, or whatever marker type you want them to be, if they're non-shed hunting markers as well. But so it's a custom process to allow you to do that. The unfortunate thing is Onyx doesn't, understandably, doesn't export the timestamps for their markers. So if you import into any other app from Onyx, it'll just have the name and GPS location. Everything else doesn't pass through.
Typically the name, the date stamp is the default name, right?
Correct. So what we have done is if the name is the default name that has the date in it, the timestamp in the title, then we can parse that and apply that to the timestamp within Scout to Hunt. But if the name has changed, you know, if the user changed it, then there's no way for us to grab that information.
And you're trying to tell me that I had part of this idea?
Yeah, we discussed this on the last call. Yeah,
that seems like something way too smart for me to come up with.
Yeah, well, you're the one who brought up the fact that hey, why don't we just force the opportunity or force a selection on the markers as they're imported.
Oh, because did we have, was that like, hey, can you do this? And you're like, yeah, we haven't found a way to do it yet. And then I was like, well, you could just do this.
Yeah. I just brought up the fact that, when you export from Onyx, for example, they come out as generic
X's.
Types.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you lose that value of, if you had the shed marker selected on X.
Oh, and then I must have been like, what if we just ask the question then when they import them on the Scout to Hunt side of like, what kind of icon do you want?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I still feel like that was probably more you than me.
Well, you have to go back to the episode.
I'm glad I can help any way I can. I love helping brands. And honestly, like, I've talked to so many people and I'm an engineer, so I get a lot of ideas, and most of them I'm like, I would love this, but am I really going to start a business about this? And so I'd rather just give the idea away and hope they do it, and then I'll buy it from them instead of spending hundreds of hours trying to figure it out myself. So,
yeah.
No, that's pretty cool. I like it a lot. I mean, I've been using it exclusively for my shed hunting app for a long time, and I am assuming by now, like, you've probably hit the radar long ago of some of these other companies. Have you, like, had conversations with, like, Lorenzo or the Onyx team on, like, hey, love what you're doing, I'm not trying to step on any toes, I'm doing my own thing. Like, have you had any of those conversations?
No, and I don't think there really is an incentive right now for them to do that. I know the big thing right now, with Basemap, Go Hunt, and Onyx is really seeking, following the Go Hunt path with the, the application and data and the tags and all that stuff and hunt unit information. So that seems to be the focus for all those guys, whereas we're just kind of chugging along, doing our own thing with the shed hunting community.
That's what I was going to hope for, is that they see the value that Scout to Hunt brings and the fact that you're not trying to compete with them, and so that they don't, like, I don't know, not that it would matter anyway, but like work together in a sense versus like work against each other.
Right.
Right. Yeah, like I would hate for another company to try to like come out with something half-assed that tries to do this. Whereas they just like, hey, we're the hunting app. They're a shed hunting app. Like, just go get their app. We love those guys.
Yeah, that'd be a really interesting conversation. We wouldn't be opposed to having that conversation. But at the moment, like I said, I just don't think it's a big point of interest for them right now.
Cool. Well, either way, I love what you're doing. I'm really happy you did it. I've been, like I said, exclusively using Scout to Hunt for all my shed hunting stuff. I got to get in there and start migrating. If you want any more beta testers, I will happily start migrating.
Yeah, did we not get you set up last time? I thought we got you set up last time.
I think I have the normal app.
Okay, well, yeah. We'll
let me see what my app has on it, and we'll start there. I won't say anything out loud in case it's a secret. No, I think I just got the normal one because I think what happened was I was in a super rush because I think we were going to New Mexico like fast or something. Or maybe I was already in New Mexico. The New Mexico trip was like my last shed hunt of the year because it was late April. So I haven't really done much since then. And now my phone doesn't want to cooperate. Probably need an update. All the cool stuff you've done, I probably need to update my app.
Yeah, I can go check. Send me your email address. Well, I guess I already have it.
I don't want to be fair. I don't know what email address I got. I signed up with. I've got a lot of email addresses. I've also got a lot of people delivering mail to me today. This is the second truck that's stopped while we've been talking. Just got to hunt. No, it looks like it's fully up to date. My phone just doesn't want to load. I don't know what's been going up with my phone lately. I'll have to work with you offline to get that. But yeah, no, I would love to help test it out any way I can. I mean, I got all kinds of shed apps because I use the colors to filter, like color, all my apps are, or all my pins are color coded on all my apps. And I try to stick to the same color code. But like for me, I use blue as like an idea, like a scouting idea. So if I have a blue shed icon, that's like someplace I'd like to check out because it looks good versus a black shed icon would mean like I went there and there was nothing. Like don't go back there. Then I leave like normal sheds as the real, like whatever native color they come up in each app because I just want to – I don't want to forget. I don't want to waste time. I just want to be like, boop, shed, and keep
– Right, moving. Okay.
So I use them like that way. And so I got all kinds of them to try. And then I could – based on what state they were, I could tell what kind of shed it was. Like, we only found elk and mule deer in New Mexico, obviously. I've only found whitetails in Minnesota, obviously, so.
Got it, okay. Yeah, it seems like a logical system. And, yeah, the other side of that, too, is the cataloging. So, you know, when you do find a marker, you select the left or right side. You can add, you know, the points if you're kind of, you know, eyeballing the score of it and then the condition of it. And all that will show through on the new stats, the Shed Hunts experience. So, yeah, offline we can get you all set up in that if you don't already have it. But that's the big thing now is being able to see the information on an aggregate level.
Yeah. I remember my app had all of those in New Mexico, left side, right side, points, score, age. I think it had all that. So maybe I did have – I don't know where you were – last year in the development cycle versus when I was using it. So I don't know if I had
that. Last year, our focus was offline 3D maps, which I believe are still the only app that has the capability of taking your maps offline in 3D. So that was a big focus last year. The Shed Hunts is new. This just came out about a month ago. So we can review that. But basically what you can do is when you're shed hunting, right, you can create a shed hunt similar to
like a track.
The hunt feature in Go Hunt or the folders in Onyx, where you can organize your markers.
Oh, nice.
The same idea, but instead of just organizing it, you're getting a suite of stats and charts and statistics that are helping you understand more about those markers and those sheds where you're finding them. So again, like average elevation by year, the match set stats, you can get a breakdown of the species you're finding as well as, you know, the conditions, the percent of conditions, if they're chalk, white, brown, how many are left, how many are right. And then your season totals from year to year for that specific area. So if you create, so let's say you go to New Mexico, right? Had you had it then, you would have created a shed hunt for New Mexico and all the sheds that you found in that area in New Mexico, you would have added to that shed hunt.
Yeah.
So now you have that, again, that suite of data and insight for that specific area that doesn't ever go away. You can refer back to that year after year. And if you keep shed hunting that area, you're going to add that many more stats to it or data that helps it become significant in a way statistically of what you're finding and where to look from year to year.
Is there a way to tag the antlers with some like, and this is going to be really hard, so maybe rudimentary, like, weather conditions or season conditions? Like,
yeah, great question. So right now it's just the big part is the average elevation, which has a correlation with the winter conditions. But we've had a lot of requests from our testers and our live users for incorporating winter conditions into that discussion. So snow levels, winter conditions, whatever, to help support the story that your average elevation, shed elevation is telling you.
Yeah, you maybe have to just like, I'm thinking like feasibility for like implementing would maybe be like on your hunt, you just say like, you know, 2024 New Mexico, and then there's just a prompt like, what was the snowpack like this season? Like low, moderate, yeah, high. And you should be able to and see, or like what would be really helpful for us whitetail guys, which is obviously like way low on your priority list, but like crop rotations would be the biggest thing.
Okay. Yeah.
Crop rotations or food plot rotations, like standing corn, you know, and you're like, oh, when they're standing corn, all my shed icons are right on top of it. Versus when the, you know, when there's something else here, but corn over there, like you could start to like see how these antlers are moving based on like crop rotations. Snowpack for sure would affect it, because snowpack's going to yard them up really, really well. Stuff like that. I don't know how, like, you know, you want a universal tool, right? Like you don't want to have to develop different features for every application. So I don't know how you would like make a food tool for whitetails and how that would correlate to elk and mule deer.
Well, it, like you already talked about, we have different species, you know, species specific markers. So the whitetail marker could have additional features on it that differ from the elk, mule deer, blacktail, moose.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah, that would be fun. That would be super cool. Because I've like, I don't know, I've been trying to build like a app for trail camera data. And that's some of the stuff that I want to like be able to like do predictive analytics on.
Yeah.
And,
okay.
Like for like trail cams and whitetails, I'd love to get it to a point where the app says, you know, hey, I'm going to go hunting. It's Friday evening. And the app says, based on all the data we know about your farm, the highest percentage chance of you seeing a mature buck is this stand based on tonight's weather and pattern conditions. Right. And then you like hunt it and, you know, see what happens. But the more and more data you get, the better and better it could be. And so that's where I was like, for shed hunting, it's like based on your current weather conditions and this property and the crop rotations or the feed conditions if you're out west, maybe grazing rotations would be the thing. You know, statistically, you're best off shed hunting this area.
Right. Yeah. And what's really fun about this is it doesn't take away from the fun and effort of it.
Yeah. You still have to do it.
Yeah. Because you're the one building it, right? These are your stats. And it's honestly, it's just a way for you to actually translate and articulate what you're already thinking as a shed hunter.
Yeah.
The questions that you already have, the ideas that you already have, but you never really put down on paper because it's too cumbersome.
Yeah.
But with the Shed Hunters app, you know, the Scout Hunt app, it's very quick and simple, and it's all there for you. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, I'm actually seeing what I've been thinking, and now I can retain it and not have to worry about forgetting it. And it becomes one of the other, you know, verbiage we use is that it turns, you know, insight into instinct. So you're learning from yourself, and then it becomes habitual.
Yeah. I like that. I'm an engineer, so I like data-driven decisions, and that's why I'm always trying to like build tools to like visualize all the stuff I have in my head and like verify that I'm thinking about it right, or not forgetting something. Like, you know, it'd be common, and I've caught myself doing this. Like, oh, this place was dynamite last year. Like, I'm going back, and then you go back and you don't find a thing, and you're like, what happened? And you're like, oh, well, duh, there was standing corn here last year. There's not this year.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's a great point.
So yeah, I don't know. That'd be something sweet, for sure. But either way, that's obviously can be down the road. Whenever you're ready to do the whitetail Bitcoin,
we're coming to you. Yeah, we're coming.
I'll help out. I'll help. I'll throw out some proposals. I'll let your team kind of pick. Like, I like this one. We can craft all the riddles and hints. I'll go. I can put it out. I won't tell a soul. I won't even shed hunt that property. Well, I'll go as far as renting a car so no one knows where I am. They can't follow me.
Sounds good.
I know like some people like have iconic vehicles, like Newberg's truck is one that I've seen like people will find and follow.
Really?
Yeah, because they know he's got a raptor with like a custom. You know, they may not follow him, but when they see it, they know it's him. Type of like Newberg's hunting here, like, oh, this must be a good spot type of thing. Like, I'd hate for someone to follow my truck and just win it on default.
Definitely. Yep. That's what we want to avoid.
Yeah. But either way, man, I appreciate you being here. You said a whole bunch of new features are coming out this year. Some of these ones that are coming out quite soon. Any other big things coming down the pipeline that people should keep their eyes open for other than the tips and the hints and the states?
Just the Shed Hunts experience, man. The new Shed Hunts experience is amazing. And we definitely, if you're, like I said, if you shed hunt, this is your app. You got to get in there.
Awesome. It's, I think you're underselling it too, by the way. Like, the, it's so cheap compared to the value. I mean, there's a free plan, but I have the pro plan, and it's like very, it's a very, very affordable and very, very undervalued, like what it's cost. Like, it, you shot yourself really low.
I mean, it comes out to $2.50 a month, you know, for the $29.99 a year. So yeah, no, it's like we said, it's a companion to what other app you have. And so we want to fit that model, right? And it seems to be working. So, but,
or in other words, it's like less than a dollar a mile, and it's going to help you put those miles to use in better spots.
Well said. Very well said.
Yeah. Yeah,
couldn't agree more.
It's a very good value, folks. Like, go get it. Seriously, just get the pro plan and find more sheds. Honestly,
the shedicated. Yeah, if you're shedicated, then you get the shedicated plan. That's right.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you being here. Once again, Brendan, I will put the links to Scout to Hunt, the Instagram page, the website, all the stuff will be in the show notes for anyone that wants to go out and find a $10,000 antler. Hopefully report it. Like, it's cool either way, but at least let Brendan know you found it if you don't want the money, so they know what's going on.
Ideally, yeah.
Ideally, you let someone know you found it so there's not 300 people in his DMs saying, hey, it's not here. Awesome. Well, I appreciate you being here, Brendan, and thank you for listening, folks.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.